Blog Talk Radio.
Responded to a heart stop, an elderly patient
who was out cutting his grass and had a syncope problem, went down. They not only took him to the hospital, they came back, and the whole crew cut and trimmed his lawn for him. So we want to send a big, big thank you out to those guys. What a great, great crew.
That was lots of courtesy of them.
Yeah. Well, we got what the hell happened to help Kel Brooks?
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, apparently Kel Brooks was stabbed in an incident on vacation, a sort of vacation type thing.
Yeah.
I forget what the island's called. But
I believe it's Tenerife. He was visiting the Spanish island of Tenerife, and he was stabbed in the leg. He was in critical condition. He's been released from the hospital.
Yeah.
There still hasn't been much information as to the issue that led to his being stabbed.
Yeah. And apparently this is not his first time being stabbed in an altercation.
Oh, wow.
Oh, well. That makes it easy.
In a party in Sheffield, England in 2007, he was stabbed, I think, multiple times in his side.
Hmm. Wow.
So.
Man.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they're afraid to try it anyplace else because you beat him to death.
Well, so at least he's out the hospital. We just wish him a speedy recovery. I mean, you know, he's just had the biggest night of his life as far as his boxing career is concerned, so. You know, we want him 100% healthy to see, you know, how good he really is.
That's right. Well, you know, talking about the biggest night of his life, I was talking to Kid Chocolate, Peter Quillen, the other night, and he vacated his title.
Yeah.
He wants to fight at 160. I mean, you know, I was kind of dumbfounded because the payday on that was probably going to be about $1.4 million, $1.5 million.
1.4, three times higher than anything he's ever made in his career. What did he have to say to you, Butch? I'm very curious about that. What was his reasoning? Because he has no fights on the horizon, so it's not like he turned down a $1.4 million payday for a $1.5 million payday. He has no fights lined up on the horizon. So what was his reasoning behind that?
Well, there's some out of the ring investments that he and a couple other guys have gotten into, and that he wants to pursue that because it's going to be much more lucrative than and last a lot longer than. There's four fighters in on it, and Lehman Brewster is another one that's in on it.
Oh, okay.
And they got a new cigar thing, and they feel that they're going to make more than that. And they want to get out and pursue this this business operation, but he does want to bulk up to 160 and come back in. So,
well, he's fighting
at
160 now. He just gave up a 160-pound title. He was fighting at 160.
Yeah.
So I mean, is he taking time off or is he?
Yeah, basically.
Okay. Well, you know, if a guy's heart's not in it, he has no business having his body in the ring.
Right. And he just felt that this was the best thing he could do at this point in time. But another story that keeps cropping up. We talked about Kel Brooks and talked about his 2007 incident. It seems that Mr. Mayweather has more legal problems with the feminine gender.
Yeah, it seems like his ex-fiancée, Juan Chantal Jackson, has filed a civil suit against him. A lot of stuff went down, you know, things that I've read, but it's just not for me. Again, it's significantly outside the ring. That's his personal life, so it's not worth a significant discussion as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, a lot of stuff went down that unfortunately played out on social media, and it's coming back to bite. Let's say both of them, because both of them seem to be hurt and bothered by this. So, you know, so I'm sure they'll resolve itself out eventually.
And
no,
it seems like every time a Floyd Mayweather fight comes up, there's some sort of trivial controversy that's going to precede it.
Mm-hmm.
That before he fought Madonna, before it was that he broke up with the Miss Jackson that, you know, now has a civil suit, they broke up. And,
right.
You know, so, you know, so it seems that, you know, that's, it seems to me it builds the fight a little bit. It always leaks out right before the fight, so.
You know, that was a question I had. You know, he's fighting next week. Being the, now, everybody has read, he said in the paper that he is illiterate, right, because he was challenged by 50 Cent. No big deal. He could buy any book he wants. He can buy any teacher he wants, you know. But here we are. He is. You got to give the guy credit for being one of the best marketers in the sport to come along in a long time. Here he has controversy. He's getting free press for this. Doesn't have to pay for it. But yet every time they do the story, they say, oh, yeah, by the way, he is fighting on September 13th. And there goes more free press.
And you know what? Just because he's not a great reader doesn't mean that he can't read. You know, it doesn't mean that he's illiterate just because, you know, he doesn't read well out loud. I'm going to school, I'm sure we all have, with a lot of people who don't read well out loud, but they're very intelligent people. He also made another point, which I thought was fantastic. And this, again, this whole, his literacy is, again, a debate, a discussion I didn't want to get into. But he also made a point that I thought was very fantastic, though. He said there is a difference between being educated and being intelligent. They're two different things, and that's the truth. And you know what? He is not the most educated guy. I'll be the first one to tell you he dropped out, I think, in eighth grade or what have you. Now, I know if I had dropped out of school in eighth grade, I would still be very literate reader and writer. I was a good reader and writer by the time I was in eighth grade. So, you know, how well he can read, that's out loud is the question. How well he can read out loud is another question. Mm-hmm. But for him to parlay his boxing success into the financial empire he has, it takes an intelligence that is not necessarily quantified by the amount of books you pick up. And
right.
Again, you know, we talk about Albert Einstein. They say this guy was so intelligent but couldn't tie his shoe. The list goes on and on. I think being skilled or gifted in one area does not mean that you do not have flaws in other areas. I think it's the same thing physically. It's the same thing mentally. I think it's all the same.
Yeah, yeah. And one thing is, we all know people who are very book smart, and we also know people who are very street smart.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the people who are book smart, they can't advance anywhere because all they know is maybe certain things. To where somebody who's more street smart, I mean, they actually are successful in what they do.
You know what?
Because that amount of smarts, I mean, it's almost an instinct to succeed when you have street smarts to a certain extent.
Yeah,
hey guys,
savvy to it.
We're
yeah,
joined
exactly.
by our most southernmost city representative and a fluent Floyd Mayweather. I can't say devotee. I can't say he has a man crush on him because he'll beat my ass. But John, how you doing?
How's everything going, guys?
Good.
Hey,
good.
John, how's it going, buddy?
Very good. I couldn't let you do a show with Mayweather fighting without at least chiming in.
always a pleasure.
John Crane is probably the most affluent person that I know that has the up-to-date information on the Mayweather. So John, why don't you just chime in here with us?
No, I totally agree. I think the timing on and what you touched base on is important to know. Free press. Floyd seems to always have a plan, but this one here goes a little more in depth. So I'm not quite sure that it has more to do with maybe psychological gains on her part to get in Mayweather's head and maybe get a loss rather than the free press.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Ty?
Well, I think again, like John said, like Dito said, the timing of these type of issues is always a very salient point because it always happens when a big Floyd Mayweather fight happens, as all Floyd Mayweather fights are. Again, this is not something, a civil suit being brought against him. Don't know how much control he has over that, if that's something he wants to deal with right now. From a psychological standpoint, I'm sure she would love to see him lose based on the alleged hurt and pain he's caused her. And it wouldn't surprise me or put it past, I wouldn't put it past her, I should say, to pull a ploy like that. Not that I know her, but it would make sense. And I think a vindictive or a spiteful person who's been hurt can sink to those levels. At the same time, this has just come out in the press. How long has this been in the works? We don't know. Did he know about this for quite some time before it was released in the press? So this might not even, this might be much ado about nothing in regards to the psychological aspect of it, contingent upon how long he may have known about it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Z, you want to break down the fight next week?
Absolutely. The Floyd Mayweather fight. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I think a lot of it is going to be the same as the first fight. I just think that Madonna said that he was going to come in a little less than 160 just to have that stamina. So because he faded a bit in the last fight, I think Floyd had a lot to do with it, a bit of the body shots. But that 160 for Madonna, he can't go 12 hard rounds as a 160 guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's what actually helped him out more than anything. Madonna's smaller. I don't think he's going to be strong enough, really big enough to have that effect on Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with the fight being a week away, and the news coming out. I don't believe it's going to have any effect on the fight. With the fight itself, I believe that Floyd, obviously, he went into that fight, and Madonna gave him probably the best fight that he's had or the best challenge that Mayweather's had in his career. And if I'm going to bet on a fighter that's going to be able to adapt to someone's style, it's going to be Mayweather, who I believe is the greatest defensive fighter of all time, and able to adapt to his opponent. So I believe with even with Madonna against the ropes, you've got a new referee in Bayless who's one of the best refs, if not the best ref in boxing. So I think the dirtiness of the fight is going to be cut down dramatically, and that's going to work in Floyd's favor.
Yeah, I completely concur with you, John and Zito. I think the thing about Madonna is when we talk about adaptability is Madonna is not going to adapt. What you see is what you get. Now, what he can do is sharpen the tools that he has. He can be a little less crude at certain points in time, but he is the fighter that he is. When we think about the fight that happened the first time and we think about the rematch, the first thing our minds tend to wonder to is what Floyd needs to do differently. And the reason why we think that is, first of all, he didn't really lose the fight. He won the fight. But we think what he needs to do differently to make this fight a more convincing victory for him. And the reason why we think that is because we expect Floyd to be able to adapt. We don't expect Madonna to be able to adapt. Again, he can only be a little bit sharper, better conditioned version of the same guy who showed up. Floyd, number one, could use his speed a little bit more like he did Robert Guerrero. If he did, he gives Madonna less chances to trap him. I, for one, think he needs to take and hold his ground a little bit more, kind of like Amir Khan and Devin Alexander did with Madonna first. I think that's big. Both of those guys did that. And at certain he had relatively easy times with Marcos Madonna, so I think that's what Floyd needs to do. But I think this fight ultimately comes down to, at 37 years old, does Floyd, is he still able to adapt? If he is, because that's all it really comes down to me, his age. And, again, if he's still able to adapt and move when he has to and stand his ground, and, you know, the reflexes that we haven't seen dulled are still there, then, you know, he should beat Madonna pretty convincingly.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
So I was going to say, while we have you on the phone, I wanted to ask you, Floyd, I always thought Floyd had one defeat on his record. All this time, and that was the first fight against Jose Luis Castillo.
Of course.
And I watched it over and over, and I just can't, I give Floyd that fight. What do you think about that?
If you look at it, it's boxing. And though that we believe that Castillo may have won the fight, the fight was still given to Mayweather. I'm a biased guy when it comes to him when he's in the ring. Outside the ring, I kind of just got to throw it away and just look at the talent when it's fight night. But, you know, I watched the fight numerous times. I honestly thought it could go either way. I think the right call would have been to give the fight a draw. I honestly do. But with the judges scoring it, I'm still going with the unblemished record without the asterisk.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I think one thing people have to look at too with Mayweather is ultimately, he's a defensive master. I've always said I think he's an A-plus defense, but I think he's a B-plus offense. And, you know, with that being said, I think he's a defensive master, but offensively he's the economical counterpuncher. He's a sharpshooter. When he doesn't move his legs much like he did against Castillo, he didn't move his legs as much. And also, he had a hurt shoulder. People forget that. I think he tore his rotator cuff in that fight. But when he doesn't move his legs as much and he's more of a standing target, even though he can blunt so many of the incoming shots with his defense, he's very capable and susceptible to being outworked like he was in the first part of the Madonna fight. He wasn't getting, he got hit clean, don't get it wrong, but, he was hitting Madonna clean practically just as much, but he was, being blatantly outworked because by not moving his legs, he gives the other guy punching opportunities, and even though he's blunting the other guy's offense, he's not getting a lot of offense off. He's just getting shots here and there off in between. I think that's the one weakness to the way he defends, especially when he doesn't move his legs. I think that's why Castillo was able to push him to a very controversial decision. I think that's why Madonna was able to push him to a decision. I think he has one of two choices. He either has to move more and be a little bit more elusive of a target and not rely on just blunting a guy's punches but not allowing the guy to get off, or he needs to get off first. And, again, somewhat limit Marcos Madonna's opportunities to get off.
Let me throw one little cog in this wheel here. Hall of Fame promoter, Mr. Bob Arum, we all know how honest the man is, told the San Francisco Chronicle this week that the fight between Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather will happen next year, and they will, in fact, they will have two fights next year. What's anybody think of that one?
Well, as I've always said, I have to actually see the contract the day before the fight, see both signatures on the contract, and I still may halfway believe it.
If anyone's going to go on and promise that fight, it doesn't need to be Bob Arum. We all know that Mayweather and his whole camp has a distaste for Bob Arum. I think a fight has a better chance if Bob Arum just lets things happen rather than chiming in. The more he talks, the more he's going to get some pushback from the Mayweather camp.
Sure.
I do believe the fight is going to happen. I really believe both fighters. I think it is going to come down to, again, the steroid testing. Even though many believe that it was Mayweather dodging, let's be honest, since the steroid testing that Mayweather's camp put up, Pacquiao has not been the same fighter. Whether you attribute that to possibly the use of steroids, attribute it to age, or him just fighting better fighters and getting caught, it has to come into question. So I do think the fight is going to happen. I wish it would have happened 5 years ago, but, I do believe it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen twice, though.
I also think, just like the allegations in the civil suit with Ms. Chantel Jackson, how we question the timing of that, also question the timing of Bob Arum's statement. Anytime Manny Pacquiao fights, you always hear certain things about Manny Pacquiao coming out of Floyd Mayweather's camp. And anytime Floyd Mayweather fights, you are consistently going to hear certain things about Floyd Mayweather coming out of the top rank camp. So when I start to hear this, when neither guy's fighting, I tend to hear these types of rumors in right around between May and June and between September and November. When I start to hear them around January, or July, then I'll start to believe them a little bit more. But right now, again, they piggyback off of each other for press right now. Now, again, the Cold War is thawing out. There have been a lot of under-the-table fights that have been made between Golden Boy and Top Rank. In fact, we were talking about Peter Quill and Matt Korobov. That was going to be another Golden Boy Top Rank thawing of the ice fight, so to speak, even though it was going to be promoted by Rock Sports. But with that said, the fight is potentially on the horizon. But again, like Zito said, until both guys are actually in the ring, laced up with gloves on, again, it's 3 years too late. So,
okay, John.
No, I totally agree. The fight is something that everyone wanted to see, and it's going to be a talking point when you talk about both these fighters 10, 15 years from now, or further down the career line when we're all dead. what would have happened if this fight had, you know, took place. There'd be articles written, sportscasters just like us are still going to be talking about it. So it's a shame that they couldn't get it done for the fans. And it's a shame on both of them. I mean, I'm a fan of them in the ring, but shame on both of them not getting what the fans want, especially when boxing needs it.
Let me ask you one more thing while I got all you guys together. You know, Golden Boy, obviously, since the split of the CEO, is having major problems. Now, Oscar's trying to get Arum to put a fight together with Danny Garcia versus Manny Pacquiao. You think that will ever come about?
You know what, I think that is very likely. And actually, when I read that about a week and a half ago, that made all the sense in the world to me. The bigger fight, if you were to, you know, again, just taking Mayweather versus Pacquiao out the equation, that if we get a Pacquiao fighting a Golden Boy fighter, I could see it not, first of all, Mayweather's not necessarily a Golden Boy fighter, but I could see, and how can I put this, I could see in a sense, De La Hoya throwing Danny Garcia to the wolves in Pacquiao, so to speak, as an olive branch. It's a great fight for Danny Garcia because if he wins, he's on top of the world. If he loses, he lost to Manny Pacquiao. The bigger fight from that standpoint would be an Amir Khan fight because Amir Khan is the bigger name than Danny Garcia, though he lost to Garcia. And he's, you know, obviously brings in that UK pay-per-view. And he and Pacquiao actually have some history. However, when I think about when I'm a promoter's cat, if I'm Oscar De La Hoya, it makes more sense to put Danny Garcia up against Manny Pacquiao. I have him fight him at 147. If he loses, he just loses to Pacquiao. If he wins, now you have another draw. Right now, Amir Khan, as long as he's winning, he's a draw. Yeah, the moment he stops being a draw is when he starts getting knocked out again. But as long, no matter who he fights, he's a guy who's charismatic, and he's a draw. He's a draw in the UK, and he's starting to not as big on this side of the pond, but he's a bit of a draw. Now, if you get a Danny Garcia to fight Pacquiao and he wins, now you have another draw. So I think that makes sense. Danny Garcia is like, what, 25, 26 years old? Amir Khan's 25, 26 years old. So if you're trying to build your promotional company for the future, it makes sense to start with a Danny Garcia versus a Pacquiao. And if I'm Golden Boy, I don't worry as much about a Floyd Mayweather versus a Manny Pacquiao. Floyd Mayweather is not a guy I have signed under contract if I'm Oscar De La Hoya, and he's also a guy who's not going to be around in 3 or 4 years. So I start to think about the future of my company, and Danny Garcia is a guy with his father that could possibly have that star potential. So to me, that, from a business standpoint, I thought that was brilliant. I think that's brilliant for Oscar to think that way, personally. I think Danny Garcia is the best guy that he could send to Pacquiao right now.
Right. I like the direction that they're putting Danny in right now because they're talking about him facing Lamont Peterson. Mm-hmm. I think that could very well derail the chances of Danny Garcia fighting Pacquiao. Mm-hmm. If that fight comes across.
Go ahead, John. You talk first.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if this is a fight that Pacquiao wants with Arum talking now. I mean, Danny Garcia is a more than formidable opponent. Do I think Pacquiao has advantage? Yes. But, if you're really looking for that major payday and you really think that fight is going to happen, I'm just wondering if Pacquiao would take that fight.
You know what? I think if I'm Pacquiao and if I'm Arum, I find the Danny Garcia fight much more attractive than a Keith Thurman fight. You know what
yes.
I mean?
Yeah,
and so when I start to look at it like that, even Sean Porter coming off of a loss, Sean Porter's a guy who's fought at 160. Keith Thurman's a big, hard-hitting 147-pounder. Danny Garcia is a guy who at 140 has struggled with Eric Morales to a certain extent, and even though he's beaten a lot of people, and I agree with you, he's very formidable. He's never looked like a world beater, and he's always looked vulnerable. If I'm Bob Arum, I'm like, you know what? That's a fight I could take if I want to take a Golden Boy fight because I'm not going to take a Keith Thurman fight, not for Manny Pacquiao.
Agreed. Good, great point.
You know, I had a chance to talk to the new Ray Robinson.
Hey!
He and Dave were kind of upset that they didn't feel that was a good fight. They thought that he would be a better fight for it. What do you think, Ty?
A better fight for who?
He thought that the instead of anybody else, Garcia fighting Pacquiao, that he should get a shot at it. He's got,
you know,
already got three belts.
And I understand that, you know, Ray does hold a, you know, a minor belt. Here's the thing, though. In boxing, let's be honest, it's a business. Right now we got Chris Algieri, who's a relative unknown, fighting Manny Pacquiao, but he's fighting that fight off the strength of him fighting on national TV, and you know, no matter what you thought about the decision, but beating Ruslan Provinikov. What I'd like to see Dave Tiberi do is step up Ray's level of competition. We were down at the show at the Dover Downs, and the guy that was in the ring with Ray had no business being in the ring with Ray. And, you know, Ray took him, he dispatched him the way he's supposed to. But it's time for Ray, you know, hopefully, you know, Dave can go ahead and make something happen and give Ray that next step-up level of competition. The guy I always thought would be a good fight for Ray would be the guy who's fighting tonight, a comebacking Andre Berto. It would give Andre Berto a chance to win the title against Ray, and it would give Ray a chance to make a name against Andre Berto. So I like to see Dave make those kind of moves for Ray, you know, to get him on TV, fighting a name opponent, somebody that could get his name in that field. Because, you know, Ray is, I believe, ranked 10th in the WBO, but he's not ranked, you know, he's not ranked by ring in the top 10. And right. So to do that, he needs to step up his level of competition. Now, obviously, the fighter is always willing to take the next step. But it's up to the management, Dave Tiberi, the guys over at Champ, to go ahead and make that next step so his career can proceed forward. Because before he can fight a Pacquiao, he's going to have to fight a Provinikov, an Algieri, a Mauricio Herrera. You know, he's going to have to fight somebody on that level first.
You must have been listening to our conversation, because he's working with somebody right now to do just that. But go ahead. Zito, tell me what you think about that one.
Ray needs a name. Ty is absolutely right. Ray, he, right now, he's in a prime position that he needs a name. And just saying that, because if you wait too much longer, I mean, any fighter can lose, and he can lose some popularity with that. Mm-hmm. And right now, Ray, he's fought Sean Porter, not when Sean Porter was known, well, this known, but he fought Sean Porter and went a decision with him.
Sure.
Since then, he really hasn't had that name, that competition, to where he should have it, to be honest. He should have probably had it maybe a year or two ago.
Right.
So to Karash, you know, any one of those
yes.
guys, man. You know, what he needs to do is he needs to fight that lower fringe contender. That's what he needs. He needs a good fringe contender to fight for him to move up. So.
Okay. What do you think now? Here comes another one. Out of the blue, Manuel Marquez is coming back into the ring, Ty. What do you think about his fight?
Well, you know, Juan Manuel is my favorite fighter. I say that proudly. With that being said, Juan has flirted with retirement over, you know, ever since his fight with Alvarado. Then there was something out that he would fight Cotto at 150, that he possibly liked that fight. Then there was something else out saying that he would only fight Cotto at 147. And I think what it's coming down to is Marquez is still kind of looking for that fourth title. But at the same time, I really think, you know, the fire is kind of gone. I think he's looking for a big challenge because he wants that fourth title. But outside of that, I don't think he's, you know, I think Juan has one foot out of the ring, so to speak. I love him. I love watching him ply his trade. But, again, I do think he has one foot out the ring. He's not fighting Pacquiao again. Berenstein doesn't want that fight. He doesn't think it's a good fight. He doesn't think Juan has anything to prove, and he thinks it's too tough a fight. And, you know, he'd like for Juan, if he's going to fight on, to seek out a challenge that's going to enhance his legacy. Outside of that, he'd like to see Juan step aside, too. So, and his family wants him to retire. So I think he's kind of walking that fine line. So,
John, what do you think?
Based off his last performance, I can't see how he has a foot out the door, because he looked real good against Alvarado. He looked sharp. He did what I really didn't expect him to do. I thought he would catch Alvarado, but I thought he would have problems with Alvarado's side. He completely outclassed Alvarado. Based off of that, I mean, he doesn't seem to be slowing down to me. I mean, Marquez loses fights against styles.
Mm-hmm.
He loses fights against certain styles. A Timothy Bradley who is capable of throwing 1,000 punches a fight and moving his feet around. And is a tough guy, could take the shot. Marquez lost to Floyd, a bigger technician,
mm-hmm.
the defensive wizard and a bigger technician.
Mm-hmm.
He loses to those styles. It depends who he fights. If he fights a guy who's going to come at him, he'll take him apart till he knocks him out. If he fights a guy who he'll duel with, it depends. Like, as I say, him and Pacquiao were so exciting because what they do, it negates each other a lot, and where some of it actually enhances each other. Marquez might wait for some punches to where Pacquiao's going to throw a lot of punches,
mm-hmm.
and he will outscore Marquez to where Pacquiao will throw a lot of punches, exposing himself to Marquez's counter punches.
Since the days of Freddie Norwood, Wymeyer has always had trouble with slick movers, and that's why when Bradley fought him, Bradley employed more of that style. Guys that stay in his wheelhouse, be it counter punchers, boxer punchers, sluggers, he takes those guys apart. And he's still capable of doing that at a high level, I agree. But I think for him, the motivation just isn't there, which is why we're all these months removed from an Alvarado fight, and there's no fight on the horizon, nothing signed for him yet. I mean, there was talk of him fighting the winner of Kell Brook, Sean Porter. There was a little talk of him going over to London. There's just been talk, you know, for the past few months, but he himself has been very non-committal to anything. And again, I think part of the reason is because he is being pulled. He still knows he can perform at a high level, but I think for a guy like Juan Manuel Marquez, for guys like that, it comes down to, just like Carl Froch said, it's not so much getting in the ring, but it's wanting to go through the rigors of training camp. And guys like Froch and Marquez, their training camps are insane. And, you know, at 40 years old, 36 for Frost, you get to the point where you don't necessarily want to go through those rigors. Both guys are living comfortably. Both guys' legacy is intact. Of course, they can do things to enhance it, but these guys are the first ballot Hall of Famers. So even though he can still fly his skill at a very high level, at this point, it's very obvious that he's very noncommittal about his future, unless it's something that is very significant to him.
Well, Freddie Roach made a statement, and Miguel Cotto pulled out of his next date. He's not going to fight because he doesn't want to train in the Philippines, and he'd rather go on and prepare for a fight with either Canelo Alvarez or Triple G. But if that doesn't happen, there's been talk that it could be Juan Manuel Marquez and renew the rivalry of Latin America. So I don't know if that'd be a fight that Marquez is interested in fighting Cotto. And I know Cotto wouldn't want it, but it's still a sliver fight if he can't land Triple G or Canelo Alvarez.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? For Cotto, that would be a feasible option. He'd be getting a 40-year-old guy who's fighting, again, at 147, you know, a good two divisions in 5 years, you know, past his best. A Triple G fight for Cotto, that's not the fight you're going to see. I don't believe so either.
But that's what Cotto's requesting. But I don't believe that's going to happen either.
Well, you know what? And they're supposed to say that. They have to say that.
Yes, sir.
But honestly, I don't think he necessarily beats Alvarez. He may, but I don't necessarily know that he beats any of the real top stout 160 pounders outside of the guy who just vacated his title on Kid Chocolate. But Cotto's not a natural 160 pounder. I thought he was small at 154. So a fight for him with Marquez at 150, 147, that'd be a good moneymaker for him, and it'd be a good fight. The big fight, obviously, is the Canelo-Alvarez fight. Win or lose, that could be a cash-out fight for him. And then anything outside of that, financially, he's just gravy for him. And I think, I read the same thing, too, where he said, you know, he didn't want to train in the Philippines, so he's just going to wait until 2015. I do think if he takes a fight early in 2015, before the Canelo-Alvarez fight, say he were to come back in March or February, he's going to take a soft touch and then do Canelo around that Cinco de Mayo weekend or Puerto Rican Day for Rain weekend, one or the other. Probably Cinco de Mayo, I would assume, with Canelo being a bigger draw. But he's a guy right now, too, who is just looking to pick and choose the best fights for him. Triple G is not—it's not a good fight for him financially. It's not worth the risk, and I don't know if it ever will be. And I don't know if Cotto will be around winning at that weight to where that fight will be viable. That's the main reason why I don't think it'll happen. I don't think he'll be at 160 long enough for that fight to be viable.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I think he's more comfortable at 154. I think he saw opportunity at 160 fighting a Sergio Martinez. But, I mean, that outside of that, I don't see how he could really beat any of the top middleweights at this moment.
I don't see
how he beats many of the top 154 pounders. If you put him in the ring against Kirkland, does Cotto win? I mean, for goodness sakes, Laura and Gulo.
We saw what Austin Trout did, you know, to him. So I think, he was smart to pick Sergio when he got him. And taking nothing away from his victory, but I think it was a smart call to choose Sergio at that time. With that said, I think if he defends the title, the 160-pound title, it's not going to be a world beater at 160. Martin Murray's been calling him out. I don't know if he'd fight a Martin Murray at 160. No. There was talk of him fighting Andy Lee. That's the fight I can see him having at 160 if he has a fight at 160. Or else it's Canelo at 160. Outside of that, again, if he fights an Andy Lee and say a Canelo at 160, does he fight a Triple G? Is the money big enough, or does he relinquish that title and go back to 154, maybe retire? Again, I just don't know if that's in his long-term plans, and we all know it's not in his short-term plan. Yeah.
Well, here's another one that we've talked about over the years. Tomas Adamek. You remember Kathy was telling us she was sure that he was going to retire. He went back to Poland like he said he was going to, but now he's decided to come out of retirement. I don't know anything about this Arthur Spizlak, S-Z-P-I-L-K-A. He certainly doesn't have a pedigree. He's only got 16 fights. He's got 12 knockouts, but it seems that Tomas is going to come back into the ring. What do you think about that, Ty?
Well, I mean, Tomas, last time we see him, he was being soundly outboxed by Zara Glaskov. He's fading fast. He's had a long, very decorated career. And I think, you know what, he's been one of the best boxers, honestly, of this era, and you know, probably one of the best boxers of the last 30 years, but you'll never hear anybody say that. But this is a guy who won the light heavyweight title, then won the cruiserweight title, and then was a top, you know, at one time, five heavyweight. So he's accomplished a lot in his career, but he is fading fast. This fight would take place in Poland. It would be a big money fight for him. Outside of that, you know, his days at the top amongst the best of the heavyweight division is certainly over. His days amongst the best is over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Adam, his quick hands are slowing up. His foot movement is slowing up. His reflexes have definitely slowed up.
Oh, his reflexes look horrible.
And to be honest, all he has left is tough.
Mm-hmm.
That's all
like,
he has
remember
left
we were though. Watching the Zara Glaskov fight Zito, and Glaskov would hit him, and then he would move. And it was just like, whoa. Wow, you have to get hit before you realize the punch is coming? I mean, he looked really bad. He looked really faded. But again, I think when history looks back on the accomplishments of his career, we're going to say, you know what, this Tomas Adamek was a far superior fighter than we thought. He was obviously, I stand by this, one of the best of his era.
Hall of Famer.
Yeah, definitely a Hall of Famer, heck of a fighter. I mean, I hate to say that it's sad because you want to remember for the greatness, but it sounds like him and Roy Jones Jr. are picking their opponents from the same talent pool just to get back in the ring, maybe for a small payday. I believe he should retire, but, you know, if he still has a heart and passion for it and goes up there and shows it, so be it, and I'll watch him.
Oh, yeah.
This is how he makes money.
There was another one that was announced this week. Antonio Tarver wants to come back in and leave a for his, fight just for his legacy. You know, Tarver.
You know, it's funny. That's a very interesting fight to me. It's Antonio Tarver against Jonathan Banks. Last time we saw Jonathan Banks, he was losing a decision to Seth Mitchell. In that fight, I believe he claimed he broke either one of his hands or both of his hands. The first time, he knocked out Seth Mitchell. Jonathan Banks is a guy who fought at cruiserweight, so he's not going to be too big for Antonio Tarver. What Jonathan Banks does do well, though, is he moves well, and he puts punches together well. Obviously, he's more famous right now for being the champion of the trainer, I should say, of world champion Vladimir Klitschko. But he has a very diverse skill set. He's a very good boxer puncher. And, again, Tarver's 45 years old. He's passed it. Jonathan Banks is a part-time fighter. This is not a fight that's going to draw a lot of interest, but to a hardcore head like me, it's a very interesting style matchup, and it's a fight I'm kind of looking forward to as a guilty pleasure.
Yeah, I definitely would give the favor to Jonathan Banks, just because Tarver, he's been out for a minute, and the last time he was in, he fought Latif Kayo. He looked horrible in a draw, and he was busted for using steroids. Tarver, he's done. To me, he's done. And even as a part-time fighter, Jonathan Banks is in the game more. He's more around boxing. He's more keeping his mind fresh with boxing. To where Tarver, he had a draw with Latif Kayo. That's the level he's at.
And Tarver at 45, you know, yes, he has skill, but it's been a while. And, I mean, get in there and do what you can to Jonathan Banks. But he's already called out Hay and Klitschko. So, I mean, just and I don't think he's going to be Jonathan Banks. I know that they have pipe dreams and all that good stuff there, but I'd rather just see him go in there, especially if they haven't been in the ring for a while, show what you've got, then come out, be a little humble. But it is a sport of boxing. Talk does generate excitement. And you know what? I'll have that same guilty pleasure and be watching that fight.
You know what, John? It's what you said that makes me want to watch that fight. You said, I don't think he'll be Jonathan Banks. Typically,
exactly.
At this stage, a guy like Tarver, especially being off as long as he did, he's getting a setup fight, but he's not. He's fighting a Jonathan Banks, and I don't think he'll be Jonathan Banks, which makes it a compelling fight to me because it's not just a step up. So I give him credit that he's taking a significant challenge considering where he's coming from. But, again, he's talking a lot of talk, but they all do. And heavyweight, only Vladimir is walking the walk. So
we look forward to September as boxing fans, and I believe there are some great fights that are going to happen this month. And to finish that off on the 29th, I'm okay with that. And I look forward to seeing Antonio Tarver back in the ring because he wants to be there and to see if Jonathan Banks can do anything, as someone mentioned, as a part-time fighter.
I guess our last story of the night would be Jesse Vargas. Against DeMarco. What do you think, Ty?
You know what? It's funny. I think we all know how I feel about Jesse Vargas. Again, I don't feel anything negative towards the kid, but him as a fighter and the fact that, you know, because he was promoted by Mayweather and now promoted by Top Rank, this is a kid who's been on every pay-per-view undercard, in the main event on HBO, show everything. And you know what? I've looked at 8 of his fights, and 4 of them I've debated whether he's won, actually. And it was funny, I think it was Jim Lampley who said he's the most unbeatable, beatable fighter you'll ever see. And I thought that was so apropos. Not a fan of Jesse Vargas. He could be a great kid, but I'm not a fan of him because he gets the opportunities that a Ray Robinson should get, and he hasn't done much with it. Again, I will say this, and I say this anytime Jesse Vargas' name is mentioned, one reason why I don't like Jesse Vargas is because Ray Robinson fought Ray Knarr at the Bob Carpenter Center, knocked out Ray Knarr. Who does Jesse Vargas fight next? Ray Knarr. Not Ray Robinson. He fights Ray Knarr, the guy who just got knocked out. So I think he's a guy who's been very protected by his promoter, judges included. And he's someone who they are very slowly not looking to step up quickly because I think Bob Arum has to step him up. You got to step him up, see what you got. Let him sink or swim. He's not a big puncher. The kid's tough. He's got some boxing skills, but you got to step him up. You can't keep showcasing this kid fighting guys that we've never heard of, guys that aren't don't have a tremendous pedigree, and then watching him get a gift decision against these guys and expecting us to keep tuning in to watch him, it makes no sense. You have to step him up and let him sink or swim. 50 Cent did it with Billy Dib. For Christ's sake, you could do it with Jesse Vargas.
There's something to be said about a confident undercard fighter. I mean, he has a little brother syndrome. Simply that's that. He has a little brother syndrome to where he's always in the shadow. When is he going to get out of the shadow? When you're on at least five undercards, when is your step-up going to be? You're not supposed to – your competition is not supposed to detract. They're supposed to get better. But it seems like he gets worse and worse competition and at times has harder times with him.
His competition has regressed since Josito Lopez. It really has. Since Josito Lopez, his competition has regressed.
His competition has regressed, and so when he does step up, how's he going to look?
Well, he's not going to be able to step up. I mean, I recall watching that fight, and I had that fight. That fight was very close against Anton Navakov, I believe it was, on East North of Dark, and the judges had it 117-111, and that's attributed to who he's associated with. Unfortunately,
exactly.
the judges got another fight wrong. It was ridiculous. I couldn't believe it. Well, actually, I can believe the scores because you never want to leave it in the judge's hands. But Vargas does seem to get the – I mean, I don't know if boxers are trying to bring him up or what they're trying to do with him, but if he does step up for his opponents instead of fighting these people in the Class B, he's going to lose, and the judges ain't going to be able to save him.
And Vargas is fighting. You know what? And here's the funny thing. Vargas actually holds a belt at 140 that Lamont Peterson is a mandatory for. That's a fight you're not going to see happening at all. And you know, here's the thing. Frank does not have a lot of 140, 147-pound fighters, which is why the thawing of the Cold War is so big. So you don't get a Manny Pacquiao, Chris Algieri. You get a Manny Pacquiao, Keith Thurman, or Danny Garcia. But if you notice, Bob Arum has not thrown, and the fact that he has no one basically at 140, 147, he has not thrown Jesse Vargas in that mix at all. Jesse Vargas hasn't faced the Ruslan Provinikov. He hasn't, guys, because you know what? I think he sees Jesse Vargas as a guy who could potentially be a star. But part of it is you have to have credibility in the ring. The one thing about Pacquiao is Pacquiao could fight his ass off. Jesse Vargas hasn't proven that yet. So I don't know why you're holding him back for a potential star when you're not even confident he's the fighter you think he is yet. Because if you were, you would have stepped him up. His competition should not have regressed since his scare with Josecito Lopez. And like you said, John, that fight on Boxing After Dark, it was very close. The moment they said 117, 111, I just shrugged my shoulders. But this is what you get every time with Jesse Vargas. You get a televised fight, him scraping out a decision against a fringe contender, or a guy who's top 20 yet, but Jesse Vargas is not fighting top 10, you know, caliber opponents, but yet he holds a belt. And it's always showcased on TV. So.
Yeah, stars are made in boxing. They're not born. And so Jesse Vargas, he doesn't have the right to have star quality. What has he done for it?
John, you had
some. He's 25-26-0, and his competition should have already been stepped up. And it already says something when you have that type of record in today's day and age in boxing, and you're still fighting the same undercard opponents.
On TV. He's fighting them on TV. He's televised. He's getting these paychecks.
HBO.
Yeah. He's getting these paychecks that, to be honest, other guys deserve.
Here's the thing. They haven't even, to this point, put Jesse Vargas in with a old overweight veteran. Give him a Humberto Soto, for Christ's sake. You know what I mean? They haven't even put him in with a guy, you know, who held a title at 135, who's coming up to 140. So, I mean, there's no steady progression. Like with Keith Thurman, you saw a nice progression in this competition. There's no progression in Jesse Vargas' competition. Subsequently, there's going to be little progression in his boxing skills and acumen as well. So, again, right now, he's just, to me, his fights are just a waste of a paid telecast space.
And we just gave him the same benefit as of all his promoters and HBO and pay-per-view by giving him the last 5 minutes.
Yeah,
there you go.
Probably get more listeners, too.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're just about up on our time limit here. John, I want to thank you for coming over. And we want to ask our fans to keep a good thought, a good prayer for Martha Aiello, who suffered a hip. Is it fracture or break, John?
It's a fracture.
Yeah. We want to ask our fans to keep a good thought and a prayer for her and for her family. John, you want to lead us out?
Yeah, I want to thank everyone for listening, and thank you guys for having me. I look forward to the fights again tonight on Showtime, and obviously the greatest fighter in the world right now, Money Mayweather, next week, and I'll give you a call next week, gentlemen.
Sounds great. Ty?
Take care, guys.
Hey, John, thanks for coming on. It was great talking to you. Look forward to the fights tonight, Adrian Broner against Emmanuel Taylor. Really look forward to the Lucas Batista against Roberto Ortiz fight. Roberto Ortiz is an undefeated fighter, Mexican fighter, pretty good knockout punch, so it'll be interesting to see. Also, we have the return of Andre Berto tonight. So, unfortunately, he's not in the ring against the new Ray Robinson. Look forward to seeing everybody. It'll be a great conversation next week. Please tune in. It'll be John on here. We'll be talking Mayweather, Madonna. Zeke?
Yeah. Oh, I want to thank you guys. It's been a pleasure this week, as always. I want to thank John for coming on. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob. And if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. Butch?
Okay. Well, you want to thank everybody for calling in. John, I love you as a brother. Ty and Zito, I can't do it without you every week. This program is dedicated to those members of the armed forces, members of police and fire services. When you're out there, ladies and gentlemen, and you have a child with you, just a simple thank you means it goes a world of good for all of us. These programs are also brought to you in memory of those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Detective Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Officer Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Florida Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine softly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hands. Good night.
Shema Israel, ma son Hashem, vorat fed hakuig again, ma yer ma. on strength and length of days.
All units be advised, 1999's responded to his last emergency. End of tour, 6/13/12. May God rest his soul. Bob, we miss you. We love you.